Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Richard Rossi Live. So wonderful to be back with you after our San Francisco trip. I want to thank you all for your kind notes and prayers and well wishes. The screening in San Francisco went fantastic. I was a little nervous about it because I live in North Hollywood, Southern California, and I know more people. I have more social equity in the Los Angeles area. And lo and behold, before we even got to the theater for the screening, the owner of the theater, Adam, had informed me that pre-ticket sales were already more than Los Angeles. And the San Francisco baseball fans just really turned out for this screening. And, you know, I have to express eternal gratitude to Marty Lorre, the great broadcasting legend who has the baseball radio show for the Giants up there. Marty really made this happen. I mean, he announced it on his show. He interviewed me on his program and Jamie Nieto, who plays Clemente in our film, on his program. And it was just a fantastic turnout. And we did a Q&A after. And it was a very emotional evening. I played the song that I wrote about Roberto Clemente before we showed our film, Baseball's Last Hero. And by the way, it is on Amazon now. So go to Amazon and just search Baseball's Last Hero, 21 Clemente Stories, and get the film today. But a very emotional night. I played, the people were crying before we even rolled the film from the song. I went into the audience and sat down, and people were sobbing. And people who loved Clemente were there. I met two young men from Nicaragua, and they told me how, you know, Clemente was a part in helping them and helping bring in the medical supplies and the food when the earthquake hit Managua. And I met folks that were originally from Pittsburgh that showed me autographs they had of Clemente. And what a just an amazing night. The surreal ending for the night was a 9-year-old boy came up to the mic, Jeff Griffith, our DP. He approached this boy. We thought the Q&A was over, and he felt strongly led to have this boy speak, and he was 9 years old, the age I was when Clemente died, and he talked about writing reports in school about Clemente, and that's how I got started on this whole thing about making a movie about Clemente. As a boy, I would write about Clemente. So it ended on a surreal moment where I felt like I was looking at myself as a 9-year-old boy, and I can't thank this wonderful city of San Francisco enough. What a great city. I really enjoyed going to Haight-Ashbury and seeing the Grateful Dead house and you know, some of the places where the whole music revolution of the 60s got going. And we went up to Twin Peaks, overlooking the whole beautiful bay there, and we rode the little cable cars halfway to the stars. And it's a great city. They let the present and the past kind of coexist. They still have that old form of transportation with the cable cars, and just had a wonderful time. But today's show, we have listener-submitted questions. I have a lot of great guests on this show from arts and entertainment and writers and leading thinkers and wonderful, wonderful guests. But I like to occasionally, and we get a lot of compliments when I just do it, just me and you, the listener. We have no guests today, and I'm just going to talk about the listener-submitted questions. And we have some questions about God, about art, about film, about the intuition and meditation and all kind of interesting things. So I'll be back with you in a few moments. Thanks for tuning in. It's going to be a very enlightening show, and the questions we answer will be very relevant and helpful to you. So I'll be back with you in a moment at Richard Rossi Live. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live, and we have a question about, talk about a big question to start with, about God, about spirituality. We have an artist that submitted that they have come to a place where they're thinking God, spirituality have no place for them anymore in their artistic journey because they've been around some pretty pushy rigid religious folks of a fundamentalist nature that have, you know, not only suppressed their creativity and but turned off. They said that religion is divisive. You know, it's a thing that hurts relationships because people that get real into a rigid desire to convert others. Their art becomes propaganda, and it divides friendships. And I would agree with you on all those points. This question comes from a gentleman named Robert, up in little northern California. And I would say, yeah, that's counterfeits. That's what I would call religious counterfeits, Robert. The doctrinaire legalists that peddle a faith that hurts instead of a faith that heals. Now, to create your own life as an artist, as a person, you have to trust your own gut, and you have to recognize counterfeits, spiritual counterfeits. And your faith, your spiritual experience has to be personal. And relating to God as you understand God. But there's two responses when you see these kind of counterfeits. One is to, quote, you know, throw the baby out with the bathwater, which is to say no spirituality, no God, and become completely closed-minded to that part of life. And the person that goes in that direction, in my opinion, the militant closed-minded atheist is actually the same animal as the militant closed-minded religious fundamentalists, in that they're very obviously closed-minded, but secondly, they're very self-superior and look down on those that don't share their view. And you know, if they don't convert you to think like them, they think you're kind of dumb. Or in the fundamentalist case, they think you're damned. In the atheist case, they think you're dumb. But here's the good news: is that a counterfeit bears evidence to the reality of a genuine article. I mean, there's no counterfeit $3 bills, as far as I know, floating around, because we don't have $3 bills. You know, counterfeit's something that's real. And just because you know someone who's been through a divorce does not mean no one should ever get married. So I'm aware of the religious counterfeits out there, but for me, it doesn't make me throw the baby out with the bathwater. It makes me throw the counterfeit out, but it doesn't make me throw out the baby with the bathwater. It makes me throw out the rigid religious fundamentalism that creates a faith that hurts people, but it doesn't make me close the door on a real relationship with the master artist, the great artist. Because a healthy concept of God heals people, it doesn't hurt people. I think the prodigal son story is the best story in the Bible for a healthy concept of God, where the father runs to the son who's been through, ran away from home and been through all this decadence and is completely broke, and he's spent the inheritance on prostitutes and riotous living, and the father runs and embraces him. And when he tries to kind of acquiesce and, you know, beat himself up about, I'm not worthy to be your son, the father puts on the best, most expensive robe, kills the fatted calf, and welcomes him home. Unconditional love. And that kind of God concept frees you to be who you are, to explore, to create. And a healthy God concept or spirituality is very rooted in the here and now. Fundamentalism has people basically defer their dreams and wait for heaven that exists only in the afterlife. But Jesus said the kingdom of heaven is at hand. The kingdom of heaven is within you. Sometimes people have those funny evangelistic tactics where they talk about what would God say to you on Judgment Day, or you know, if he said, why should I let you into heaven, or whatever. I think that's kind of a facetious question. I don't think God's going to do that. But one thing I think that would be really interesting would be for God to ask, did you really live life? Did you really live your life? Did you take the gifts and talents I gave you, I innately put within you? Did you sing the song that was within you? And that leads into our second question. And the second question is from Rosa in Minneapolis about intuition. And she writes that as she's been trying to practice our book, Create Your Life, and by the way, if you haven't got my book, Create Your Life, it is on Amazon. It'll help you in your spiritual and creative journey. Create Your Life, Daily Meditations on Creativity, Richard Rossi on Amazon. And you can follow along in more depth the kind of things we talk about on these shows. But Rosa said she's trying to take our advice and listen to her, the still small voice, her own voice as an artist, as well as tune out the criticisms. But she said that sometimes people are so disapproving and tell her she's going in the wrong direction, and that's a tough one, and should she keep listening to her intuition? And I would say, yes, you got to keep following your intuition. If an artist doesn't have that, you're lost. And for me, I've had to constantly follow that. I grew up in Pittsburgh playing guitar in the bars of Pittsburgh. As a teenager, I really got into the Bible, and I really got into connecting with God, and it became a big part of my life as a teenager. And so I started writing Christian rock songs initially by myself, and then later in tandem with my best friend in high school, John Walker. And as I started to do this, conservative fundamentalists started attacking me, and later, criticizing me and John, and saying, hey, rock and roll is the devil's music, that kind of thing. And it's kind of funny now, because now even in these conservative evangelical congregations, they play guitars and have a worship band. But back when I was first doing it, it was controversial. But my intuition told me these conservative critics were bound by their own prejudice, and that I could trust my intuition that this was a valid thing what I was doing. And, I've tried to express my journey, my faith, in edgy and creative ways. And, now that I'm into movie making, I'm following that same theme. That our creativity is one of the most spiritual things we can do. The scripture says we're created in the image of God, and when we create and express that image, that creativity, art is a ministry, and ministry is an art. And it's important to let our imagination soar, Rosa, to follow the intuition, even if people discourage you, as the religious circles discourage me in that example. So, whatever your religious background or spiritual practice or lack thereof, be in touch with who you are. You were born with certain gifts. I wrote a novel called Stickman, and the main character, Jeremiah Young, one of the main lessons he has to learn is to trust his own intuition. So learn to follow that. By the way, our call-in number is 347-637-2379 at the top of your screen, and you can follow the show. Just click follow, and you'll have to maybe go through a little thing to click on Facebook or somehow log in. But once you follow the show, you'll get our updates and be more in touch with what we're doing. Keep nurturing yourself and listen. Your gut is right. Listen to your gut, Rosa. And you may have had challenges in your life, in your relationships. Maybe you've battled addiction, relapse. Those of us with creative callings sometimes have a tough path, but those obstacles make us stronger. So learn to like yourself, forgive yourself for the things you've done wrong. Release yourself from the guilt. Don't blame yourself. Don't damn down or devilify yourself in any way. And realize as you trust and build your dreams, you're shedding your skin. It's like an egg hatching. Keep your faith and keep going and keep trusting. Several questions today of a spiritual nature. This question is from Marilyn in North Carolina, and she asks about meditation. She says that she's heard me mention meditation has helped my creativity, and if I could address my thoughts on meditation. Meditation is one of the most important things you can do to enhance yourself as a person or an artist. And this is an oxymoron, because I'm not pitching meditation for the benefits thereof, because when you meditate, it's not for a specific goal. It's simply to experience that calm, that connection to God and to yourself. But that being said, meditation benefits us in a way. I think of the biblical story of Jesus and the disciples, where Peter and some of the disciples are fishing and they've caught nothing. And I saw this scene recently, my wife and I saw that new movie, Son of God, and you know, Jesus shows up and says, launch out into the deep and cast down your nets. And Peter says, well, look, we've been fishing all night, but since it's Jesus talking, they give it a try to humor him. And they pull in this abundance of fish, so many fish that the nets break. Now, meditation launches you into that the depths of your spirit, the depths of the ocean of your subconscious, and deep calls on to deep, and there's creativity that emerges from the practice of meditating daily, and it will be above and beyond all you can ask or think. The filmmaker David Lynch writes about the relationship of meditation and creativity quite a bit. So as you do this, you're going to reap rewards, you're going to catch the big fish, and the calm that comes from meditation, calm begets calm. And it's a letting go, and it's letting God come in. And when you meditate, you get so comfortable, it's like you're floating on a big, comfortable leaf down the river. And it's a wonderful thing. I've been doing it for a while now. And, you know, some people picture themselves in a calm place like a beach or a favorite vacation place. But the main thing is to get somewhere and be silent and listen to the still, small voice inside. Psalm 91 says, the person who abides under the shadow of the Lord dwells in the secret place of the Almighty. So the artist's secret, sacred life is to go to another place, and you can sit down and close your eyes. You can focus on something. I have some sacred art I use. You know, pictures of Jesus. When I was in the Milan and the Duomo Cathedral when my film Sister Amy was up for an award in the Sabaoth Film Festival, and I looked up at all that beautiful art and the Renaissance art in the Vatican Museum and in Florence. This art takes me there. So I have paintings and pictures like that that I like to look at when I meditate. There's no right or wrong way. But when you meditate, it's good to have some sort of phrase or word, a prayer phrase. A monk taught me one the early Christians used, which is Maranatha. It's Aramaic for come Lord or come Yeshua or come, or you could take Yeshua or Abba or you know, a name for God. You could just take a word or an image or something that you can keep coming back to. And you inhale, and you inhale deeply, and exhale, and you focus on your breathing, some long, deep breaths. Whenever you're feeling nervous or frightened or afraid, we breathe fast. And if you ever tune in when you're feeling anxiety, you'll notice you're you're breathing really fast. So when you meditate, you're taking time to breathe slower and be present and be still. Be still and know that I am God, Psalm 46:10. And as you get into that quiet place, 2 Corinthians 4:18 says, the things we see are temporal, but the things we don't see are eternal. And the eternal is the spirit, love, God's people, souls, the things that last, your impact on people. Albert Einstein said, material things don't have the value of truth, beauty, and kindness. So meditation puts you in touch with what really is real, and you see the big picture, and you become more at peace. I try to do it at least 2 times daily, you know, morning and evening, about 20 minutes each time. A lot of the great artists do this. David Lynch, as I said, has been doing it for years. Brando, the greatest actor of all time, meditated twice daily for an hour each time. So as you do this, you'll have a spiritual awakening, and then you ask to be of service. How can I make the world a better place? The answers will come if you are willing to wait for them. By the way, we have some upcoming shows. Mark your calendar. I know this is a little out there in advance, but mark your calendar for June 25th. We're going to have a show on the 5th anniversary of Michael Jackson's passing. on June 25th with some very special guests with connections to Michael. I'm going to reveal some things about Michael that some of you have asked about in regards to my connection to him. And we're going to do a wonderful, wonderful show about Michael. And by the way, he has a new hit out, new record release that they found in the vaults, and it's great. It's climbing the charts right now, which is so wonderful that they found that. It's called Love Never Felt So Good. And I'm really looking forward to some of the folks that are coming on the show, Deborah Kinesh, who has been a great archivist and a historian and gathering so much information about Michael. I have some personal friends who knew Michael, and we're going to have some really interesting people coming on June 25th, the fifth anniversary of Michael's death. And it's hard to believe he's been gone that long, and that was kind of surreal. My friend, my son Joshua's friend Jason called and told us, and but Michael has this wonderful new hit coming out. It's climbing the charts right now. I'll give you a little taste of it. This is Michael Jackson, found in the vaults, recorded around the off-the-wall Thriller period in the early 80s. Here it is. That's a hard song not to like, this infectious, wonderful song. Well, back with your questions, I have a question that came in from someone in the Bay Area that saw my film on Clemente, and they gave me a compliment that the message of the film, which the theme was a biblical verse, no one has greater love than to lay down his life for his friends. And they said that message came across very naturally in the story. And we did try to make it very organic in the story. It was who Roberto was. It was part of his life. In fact, Marty Laurie, the great broadcaster, asked me about the religious aspect of the film on stage. And so someone asked me my opinion of Christian film. What is a Christian film? And I'd like to address that issue you know, with what I would call spirit-led filmmaking. The term Christian film is used in church circles often to describe movies made by evangelical Christians, but the problem is the term Christian film does not guarantee the quality of the film's artistry or message. And I think there's a problem when you start dividing everything into a dichotomy of sacred and secular. And some religious people do that because Psalm 24, verse 1 says, "The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof." So I prefer to look for God's hand throughout the earth. And I find films that show faith in a powerful way, some made by evangelical Christians, but more often than not by films that are not so-called Christian films, I think, are sometimes better at sharing the spiritual message. I mean, off the top of my head, one example would be On the Waterfront. I mentioned Brando earlier, and it has one of the best sermons I've ever heard delivered by Carl Malden, who plays a priest in that film. If you haven't seen it, it's just a classic you have to see. Carl Malden gives a speech that results in the transformation of Brando's character after someone's murdered, a longshoreman's murdered on the docks. And Carl Malden gives this speech about how Jesus is crucified every day and how we need to love others and stand up for the oppressed and the weak people and have courage to do what's right. And You know, the Bible itself shows the full gamut of human nature. I think a lot of religious people have never really even read the whole Bible because the Bible itself, say a character like David, it shows his victories of faith, but it also shows his flaws and faults, like adultery with Bathsheba and, you know, covering up that adultery and putting her husband Uriah in the front lines where he's killed. And so the Bible has these different layers of humanity that it shows that people are created in the image of God, but a mixture of light and shadow. And I tried to do that in my first feature dramatic film I made, Sister Amy. I didn't shrink back from showing that Amy stumbled and bumbled along the way. She was married 3 times. She had a morals trial in court. She died under rumors of suicide. Yet she was this amazing faith-healing female evangelist, starting churches. She founded a denomination, the International Church of the Four Square Gospel, now numbers 32,000 congregations. So her fruit has remained. And the best films out there show both sides, the duality of people. Robert Duvall's The Apostle is a film, I think, that does it. It's about a Pentecostal preacher, but it shows all his emotions, the praise and the lust, the eroticism and the religion, the love and the violence, and ultimately redemption. He's not a one-dimensional preacher. And the problem with the Christian films is they suffer from what I call the white hat and the black hat approach. You remember the like old B-Westerns, they used to have all the good guys in white hats and all the bad guys in black hats. It was pretty obvious. And the Christian films that I think are really pretty lame are the ones where it shows the Christians as these perfect people ready to be raptured, and the non-Christians are always these evil, self-centered people. And there's a film I'm going to see next week, God is Dead. I haven't seen the film yet, so I can't give you any judgment on it, but I saw the trailer, and I'm real interested to see it. But Kevin Sorbo plays the professor, but at least in the clips of the trailer, they make the atheist professor out to be this kind of mean, arrogant, haughty, kind of, it's almost like the old Chick tracks. There was a guy, Jack Trick, he used to do Jack Chick did these evangelical fundamentalist comic books, and there was one called Big Daddy where the professor is this arrogant, you know, guy, and the Christian is this blonde-haired, blue-eyed, you know, hero, and that's the problem, is a lot of times, you know, the unbelievers are always these kind of very self-centered evil people. And the world's not like that. You know, it really isn't like that. I mean, I have friends that are atheists that are some of the most wonderful, loving, kind, you know, people. And I have fundamentalist Christian friends that are sometimes some of the meanest people. So this dualistic kind of framework where you divide humanity into a binary of two camps, you know, it just is not the way things are. Unbelievers are often nicer people. And whether their niceness stems from nature, nurture, or the light that lights everyone that comes into the world created in God's image, I don't know. But I don't believe in that simplistic dualism, and I think it hurts art. I think so I would favor what I call spirit-led filmmaking. The scriptures say those that are led of the Spirit are the children of God. And spirit-led filmmaking is superior to quote-unquote Christian filmmaking. Spirit-led filmmaking allows the truth to shine forth in an organic, artistic way. It's not forced. It's not fake, like in some of these evangelical films. The message comes across through the medium, like the acting of the late, great Marlon Brando in the beauty and grace of his film On the Waterfront. Wow, time has just gone by. But it's been a blessing to be with you today. I love you all, and until next time, go with God and be blessed. I love you all. Take care.